You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Joe Moore. For years, farmers in the southern San Joaquin Valley have been struggling with reduced water deliveries. The problem, as they see it, has been reduced pumping out of the Sacramento-San Joaquin River Delta, restrictions in place to help that fragile ecosystem recover. But species in the Delta are still declining. Now the state is updating its plan, and it could mean big changes for both farmers and cities that divert water from the San Joaquin and Sacramento rivers before it reaches the Delta. Here to tell us more is Felicia Marcus, chairwoman of the State Water Resources Control Board. Felicia, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Now, this plan has not yet been finalized. Staff has presented its findings, and there's all sorts of negotiations going on. We'll talk about sort of what the process is in a little bit, but let's talk about the document that we have right now. Why update the Bay Delta plan now here in 2018?
Well, the water quality control plans are plans that are done to identify all of the beneficial uses of a water body that can be agriculture, fish and wildlife, recreation, municipal, a host of things, hydropower. And they're supposed to be updated and reviewed every few years. They are actually very complex, so it takes a long time to do it. And the current standards are 20 years old, and nearly 10 years ago, the board identified that they were out of date and inadequate to protect the beneficial use, particularly of fish and wildlife, that it hadn't been enough and it wasn't working. And so our staff embarked on what's now a 9-year process of science and peer review and workshops and hearings to figure out how to update that plan to do what we're charged to do under state water law, which is to try and maximize the beneficial uses, not pick one over the others, but figure out how to set that balance in a way that accords with the interests of Californians for healthy recreation, healthy municipalities, healthy agriculture, and healthy fish and wildlife. The discussion tends to be largely about fish and wildlife because that's the one that's been recognized in our law and attended to more recently, and it's the hardest one because folks have diverted water before some of those more modern sensibilities came into place, and they've developed communities and farms and something really magical with that water. So being able to adjust the flows in order to better balance it is a very, very difficult thing to do. I guess that's a long way of saying that's why it takes us so long to do it.
The big headline out of this report goes back to those flows that you just mentioned, unimpeded flow being the big concern. Right now, in some rivers, it's 20% or maybe even less of what would be there naturally, the rest of it being diverted for municipal or agricultural or industrial use. Under this plan, that could increase to 30% or 50% of the natural flow. So how significant is that?
Well, it's interesting. It's certainly not unprecedented. The board in the Mono Lake decision did something similar. We've done similar things on the Carmel River. So it's an interesting proposal in that it's not just a set amount of water, although people have put it that way. It's a block of water we've identified of 30 to 50%, starting with 40%, which on average would increase flows left in the river, sharing the river with fish and wildlife, by about 14% on average. It's not 40% more, it's about 14% more on average. But that said, the notion of unimpaired flow is to come up with a block of water, I think it's February through June, that would leave more water in the stream to share it with fish and wildlife. But the proposal isn't just for that set amount of water. It has a number of offers, in essence, that sort of a more evolved way of setting these sorts of things that say, here's a block of water. If people come together to figure out how to shape the flows, water users coming together with fisheries experts to say, look, we think we can manage it this way and get better results for fish at less water cost, we're open to that. And perhaps the most important thing in it is something that's not novel in a settlement context, but novel in a proposal context, is that at the outset we've said, look, if you come together and add the sort of what are known as non-flow measures that fish also need, they need more habitat to be able to create food production for them when they're little and trying to fatten up to make it out to sea. They can hide from predators if you're going to do predator habitat suppression, if you know, food generation, habitat can also cool temperatures, and temperatures are very important to them. We'll cut you as much as a 25% discount on how much water and take it down to 30, because we know that fish need all of those things.
Now, along those lines, you have an op-ed in the Sacramento Bee earlier this month talking about this very issue, and you write that it's time for different parties to come together on this issue and meet in the middle, so to speak. Of course, water politics being one of the hottest issues in California just about at any time, but especially now, given the consequences of climate change and drought here in the state. We certainly have seen some groups come together. You have Valley Farmers and urban areas in the Bay Area, the city of San Francisco, and others coming out criticizing this plan. Does that speak to the challenge before you right now, that you have groups that they're rarely on the same side, in some way at least united on criticizing this?
Well, it's actually not surprising. I mean, you don't expect folks to want to hand water over. It's always that way, and folks are looking at their interests based on genuine, sincere, and heartfelt belief in the importance of what they're doing and the discomfort of what we're proposing. The proposal is seeking to find a sort of a reasonable middle ground with an incentive to do what it takes to come together and manage water actually more intentionally across the spectrum, which is the very thing that we all have to figure out how to do in order to deal with an even tougher set of circumstances we're going to increasingly face under climate change, which means we've got to think about every year and where that water goes and take water and put it away in the wet and even the normal years to save it up for fish and wildlife and people in the drier years. I mean, I think we're going to have to measure more of what we do, and we're moving in that direction. And really, I think the answer is for folks to come together and think about what is the greatest number of benefits, multiple benefits you can get out of each drop of water from the top of the watershed to the bottom, and everybody's got to give. Right now, we're sort of in the middle with folks saying not another drop on the one side, and then, you know, you're not taking enough drops on the other side, and we're looking to find those solutions where the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And that is when people come together and actually restore habitat and work together as unlikely allies to come up with better ways to manage water. It takes people getting out of their warring silos, which are rewarded in the political discourse and legal discourse, unfortunately, more often than it should be. I suppose I'm a recovering lawyer, but my cases when I was a lawyer tended to settle because that's what was actually in my client's interest. In this case, we have the public interest to think of, so it's even clearer.
Now, nothing happens in a vacuum, especially in California water. This is going on at the same time the California Water Fix proposal is still moving through the system. You have the proposed water projects being funded by the recent state water bond, and you have the state's new groundwater law that essentially is changing the way that we tap the aquifers and moving towards a one-to-one. What you take out, you have to put back in. How does this fit with all these other things that are going on? Isn't that an added layer of potential problems?
Well, I think part of the trick is trying to deal with the reality of the world, which is complicated. I have to say in the first instance that I can't talk about the Water Fix proposal because I'm a judge in their water rights petition, so I can only hear about it or talk about it in noticed quasi-judicial session, so I apologize for not being able to talk about that one.
Well, we can set that aside, but looking at SGMA, the groundwater law, if you know, Valley growers say we can do this, we can do the recharge and protect the aquifer, we can have these flows, but having both of these hit us at the same time is going to put us out of business.
You know, I think it all requires an approach and an attitude. I think we haven't shied away from saying that we know these are two things that need to be dealt with at the same time, but they're both, again, we're talking about competing goods. On the SGMA side, it's making sure that one's children and grandchildren have an ability to farm because we've not been managing our groundwater basins. We believe very strongly in the approach of having locals do it in the first instance because it's a community resource that needs to be managed there, but we also have been diverting too much away from fish and wildlife. I have to say that the tools that need to be developed in order to deal with SGMA, which arguably is a bigger, an even bigger challenge than what we're proposing, are the same tools you need to manage water intentionally to deal with the fish and wildlife issues. The whole issue is thinking multiple years about water, figuring out how to get water back into the ground when we can. We can take it in the winter months, getting it in faster. The water action plan that the administration came up with 4.5 years ago before the drought even hit was an all of the above, saying that rather than the history of California water, where folks would argue there was just one thing you needed to do, it was all storage or it was all conservation and recycling on the other side, that we have to do all of them and that all the sacred cows had to move aside and that we need to do all of it, more above ground, more below ground. We're in a race to figure out how to manage water more intentionally all across California, and that's a big change for people, but it's something I think that we need to do, and we can do if people put on their can-do hats, so to speak, rather than just the fighting hats. I mean, I've been around this for multiple decades, and I'm more of the social worker in the water wars than anything. I don't think that's just wishful thinking. I've seen those breakthroughs happen. They tend to happen at the last minute, but we've tried to lay out every opportunity, which we'd love to have before we go final, but we've laid out a pathway to be able to accept things later and be flexible. There are some folks who think we're being too flexible, but I think what we really want is for people to come together and figure out how to manage watersheds for the benefit of people and nature, and I think that's doable, but it's not easy.
So are those negotiations still ongoing? Is this going to be something that's going to play out before this is up for a final vote or maybe even after?
Well, we had been hoping we would have things by now, so we're always open to it. I think there's a lot of effort going on. I think folks may come up with the idea of things that we could implement later. I think we're always going to be open to it. It's much easier to do before we go final, but I think that we have an opening directly in the regulation to allow people to be able to significantly reduce the water cost by doing non-flow actions, and we're going to stay open to that through the life of the plan.
Felicia Marcus is the chairwoman of the State Water Resources Control Board, joining us to talk about new revisions to California's Bay Delta Conservation Plan that could mean a lot more water going back into rivers, including the San Joaquin and its tributaries. And that means less water going to cities and valley farmers. Ongoing negotiations still underway about potential habitat restoration and other alternatives. We'll see where that plays out. Felicia, thank you so much.
Thank you for the time.
Here to give us another perspective on the new plan is Canon Michael, president of Bowles Farming in Los Banos and the chair of the San Luis and Delta Mendota Water Authority. Canon, welcome.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate it.
So what was your initial reaction when you first saw this plan that was released in July talking about what are potentially big cuts to Valley Farmers' water deliveries?
Well, you know, of course, Joe, it is a concern. This idea has been around for a little while, but they're trying to push the whole plan forward fairly quickly now. You know, there's been quite a bit of comment given and a lot of input, but seems up to this point to have been mostly ignored, but it's obviously a concern because there's quite a bit of obviously pressures competing on the water system already from the kind of aggressive approach that they've taken. You know, clearly it's going to have a strong, you know, reaction, not just from, I think, ag folks, but ultimately a lot of municipal and even environmental uses that are potentially going to be impacted.
Yeah, you have municipal users as well, many of them often on opposite sides from farmers on the water debate, seemingly together on this one. Is that significant from your perspective?
It absolutely is. I think, you know, it's one of those things that it is rare to find alignment between some of the different users of water. But I think in this case, you know, we've got clear direction from a number of municipal partners, as well as, you know, from the refuge folks here locally that we have. And then, you know, just collectively up and down the valley from the east tributary side to the northern folks, and then obviously south of the Delta, there's quite a bit of alignment. And I think, you know, the State Board, I think in the larger context, it is interesting that you have a five-member appointed body that is possibly capable of sweeping actions that, you know, obviously water in California is a important issue and a resource that you would want maybe elected officials to have more ability to weigh in on. But here's a group that's you know, taking a, kind of a more active role in how the system may operate, which I think should be a concern to all the citizens of the state, really.
So for a number of years now, Valley farmers who rely on water that is pumped out of the Delta, they faced water restrictions due to the ecological impact of that pumping. But up until this point, farmers on the east side of the valley haven't faced those sorts of water cutbacks, with the exception of the most recent drought. How significant is it that now we're seeing this on the east side, on the San Joaquin and its tributaries, and on farmers who get their water far before it ever gets to the Delta? Is this a significant escalation to bring the goal for natural flows to 30, 40, or even 50% of what they naturally would be?
Those are huge numbers. Ultimately, I think the biggest concern is that we just have to really account for all the uses of water in the state more accurately. And if we're dedicating uses to any user, I think we want to just really make sure that that's going to be the most effective use of that resource. I think what we've seen over the past decades, really since the 90s, is, you know, more of a focus of shifting water supplies to help meet environmental needs, which obviously are an important use in the state for sure. And we want, you know, healthy fish populations. But what we haven't seen is the correlation of dedicating more flow. We haven't seen that necessarily result in a positive impact so far. So just the idea that we're going to just increase that one variable just is what really has a lot of concern, because it doesn't have backing of a lot of the scientific community that would want to see a more comprehensive look at all the components that need to be addressed. Flow obviously is important, and water is important. But there's been so much change in the Delta region that really, without doing the hard work, which is the multiple aspects of fixing a complex ecosystem, the flow only is going to cause significant pain to a number of users, and there's not a clear evidence that we're going to see a positive result. And I think that's really the biggest concern.
So you would support then some effort to focus more on habitat restoration? You know, that's, again, something that's up for negotiation, and there are talks ongoing, as I understand it right now. What can you tell me about that?
Well, I think by setting the targets, the arbitrary targets of saying it's going to be 40% or it's between 30 and 50, I haven't been in the settlement rooms where they've had some of these discussions, but I know from talking to a number of folks that it has been a situation where once that kind of a target's being set, it doesn't really give room towards saying, you know, there are a bunch of creative options. It's really just saying you have to just sort of work within this parameter without saying, you know, hey, maybe there's some better alternatives. People are willing to come to the table and put water up for increased use, but it needs to be balanced also with the idea that, you know, you can't just decimate, you know, the communities that rely on that water at the same time. So, again, it just seems like an approach right now that is not looking at it in a balanced and measured way.
This is coming at the same time that farmers and municipalities as well are also facing implementation of the state's new groundwater law that essentially aims to get to a one-to-one state. You're extracting this much groundwater out of the aquifer, you have to put that much water back in. How difficult, from your perspective, is it going to be for farmers to do both of these things if you're having your surface water deliveries cut at the same time you need to focus a lot more on recharging what's underground?
Yeah, Joe, I mean, I think, you know, if you just are looking at it from a mathematical perspective, there's really no way to achieve that. And ultimately, it's going to, even under the best case scenarios, you're looking at, you know, probably 1 million acres of productive farmland potentially on the chopping block in terms of water supply. So it's a huge concern for those of us who live in the valley. And ultimately, again, without feeling like it can result in anything even positive for the environmental side, it doesn't really make anybody feel very good about the fact that this is really the answer. And ultimately, it's something that's probably going to lead to potentially a lot of negative outcomes for folks in the valley, and again, difficulties with seeing a clear path that it's going to fix some of the environmental concerns.
So let's say that this does move forward and the cuts to water deliveries are draconian, at least from the perspective of Valley farmers. How does Valley agriculture evolve if California goes down this path?
I think, ultimately, even without the water constraints, I think what we're seeing with just the overall regulatory environment and the cost increases, I mean, we're seeing smaller farmers really, moving out of being able to handle the rigor of the regulatory climate here in California, which is a big loss. And, ultimately, I think you'll have fewer farms, probably skewing towards the larger farms. But, eventually, obviously, without water, there's only so much that can happen. But, again, the discussion tries to get to just be an ag versus environment, which is something that I've always thought isn't really the right full way to look at it, because, again, we have this really unique refuge complex, the second largest contiguous wetlands in the United States here right in our backyard in Los Banos, critical habitat for migratory birds, for terrestrial species, for, all kinds of unique species, and they need a consistent supply of water as well. Fortunately, I think what's going to happen here is that we're going to just devolve into a lot of lawsuits. There's going to be the continued acrimony between some of the environmental groups and obviously some of the urban and ag groups, and it's ultimately going to be a situation where dollars that could be spent on a positive outcome are going to go to legal outcomes, and usually the legal outcomes result in winners and losers instead of trying to forge a better path forward with some courage and real leadership, and that's where the hard work has to be done. And it's just unfortunate that we, continue to find these polarizations instead of working on comprehensive solutions. But as somebody who works in a complex ecosystem every day here on my farm, it's rarely just the easy one answer that fixes any problem that we have. We look at things in a holistic way in the natural environment, and not just say that there can just be one answer. And I think here we're just looking at this, continued one answer. Let's go down the same path. Let's, since the 90s, keep trying to just throw more water at the problem, and it's not resulting in the positive outcomes. And so there, again, is where, let's try to back out of some of the courtroom issues, and let's continue the good work that folks in the Northern Valley have done on areas like Butte Creek, showing that, not an increase of water, but habitat projects and, floodplain improvements and, get the fish bigger and healthier. I mean, all those things are efforts that are ones that should be applauded and encouraged. And, ultimately, yes, flow is important, and there has to be that component. But, it doesn't necessarily have to be done with sort of this hatchet approach. I think environmental problems really need, again, the scientific community on board, and the water user community can be engaged and will definitely come to the table. It's just now it's being done in the typical way that we'll all retreat and fight, and it's not going to ultimately solve the problems and lead to a lot of frustration and a lot of wasted time.
Cannon Michael is president of Bowles Farming in Los Banos. He is also the chair of the San Luis and Delta Mendota Water Authority, commenting today on the new plan that's before the State Water Board that would result, if implemented, result in some big cuts to Valley farmers in their water deliveries. Cannon, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Yeah, Joe, absolutely. Anytime. I'm happy to do it.